You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. Today, we'll probably not have a full two-hour show. And the reason is I had some business to take care of, and to make a long story short, the show is starting a little after 6 instead of at 3 o'clock sharp. First time on a Friday that it's happened, because I usually try to clear my Fridays. But, you know, when business calls, you have to take care of it, and I did, and hopefully that won't happen in the future. Today, we have some breaking news. Really, it's probably less than an hour old. Actually, maybe 2 hours, because we're in Central Time. It seems that New Jersey Governor Chris Christie may have known, if not ordered, the holdup, the closing of the lanes of the George Washington Bridge. Now, the only reason why I'm covering this is really a New Jersey, New York story. But Governor Christie, I think, has made very clear that he is ambitious and would probably like to run in 2016, if not later, as a run for the not presidential nomination of the Republican Party. It's a free country, and if Governor Christie can pull it off, good luck to him. He's never been my cup of tea, quite frankly. I've always thought of him as a rhino, or what I call a big interventionist government status. I wouldn't vote for him. And Governor Christie's problem is most of the conservatives and libertarians that I know, Governor Christie is not their pick. Now, who really likes Governor Christie? It's the East Coast establishment. Some have talk show radio shows. One I listened to on Saturday. And that's who he appeals to. What I would call country club Republicans. Who's celebrating today? I'm not really celebrating, because there's several other much more important stories to be covered. But I'm covering this for one reason. The so-called mainstream media, your television networks, as well as people in your liberal or big government press, they've been gunning for Christie, because they think Governor Christie was the best candidate to possibly defeat Hillary Clinton should she decide to run. Now, I'm skeptical whether or not she's going to run, because she has a lot of baggage, and the biggest baggage is Benghazi. And that scandal is not over, and there's a lot of time between now and 2016. And between now and 2016, I think a number of facts are going to come out that are really going to tarnish her image. A lot of them already come out, but we really have not got to the real truth of Benghazi and what was really going on. The key point is why what has come out so far is the State Department was derelict in protecting its own people. And that alone, I think, is damning. She hasn't really taken much blame for it, because the so-called bipartisan report that came out of the Senate blamed the State Department. Hillary's name was mentioned once. I think the president's name was mentioned once as well. They wanted to say, and it's like the State Department runs on its own. No, she's head of that department. You know, the buck stops with her, and the blame really belongs on her shoulders. And people got killed. Now, there's only really one point that I think could, believe it or not, I won't say save her, but a mitigating circumstance. This was first and foremost a Central Intelligence Agency operation. The ambassador that got killed in Libya, in Benghazi, was using his ambassadorship as cover for organizing the gathering of weapons in Libya, and particularly in the Benghazi area, to ship to Turkey and then from Turkey to Syria. This was a CIA covert operation or action, and they require a finding signed by the President of the United States, with 8 people in Congress being informed. And those 8 people are House Speaker Boehner, the Senate Majority Leader Reid, as well as the chairmen of both the House and the Senate Intelligence Committee, and the majority leaders both in the House and the Senate. So he had at least 8 people, including the president, knew of it, as well as the Central Intelligence Agency director at the time, General Petraeus. So this scandal, even though right now what's happening is stonewalling, we've yet to hear in public hearings one or more of the Central Intelligence Agency's employees that were in Benghazi. Many of them got injured, several seriously. 2 got killed. And the best people to tell you why they were there, as well as to what happened that night and next morning, are the people on the ground. Yet we've yet to have a public hearing where more than one, we haven't had any yet, and the reason why is the administration has gone out of its way to make sure that both the names of those people are not provided, and those people are scattered to various posts. They're not making those people available, and they should be made available. Doesn't mean all 36 have to testify, but at least several should. And usually the way it works is the staff first questions them in private, all of them, and then selects 2 or 3 or 4 to speak for the group and review what they went in private, what they said. That hasn't happened. So I don't think Hillary Clinton is out of the woods. That's why I don't believe that Hillary Clinton is going to run. Now, that's not the smart money. The smart money, it's a done deal. She's going to run, and she's going to win the nomination, and she's going to win the presidency. Well, I think I heard that before in 2008. It didn't seem to work out that way. She'll be 70 years old when she's running. I have nothing against age, but that's getting up there. This is a demanding job for anyone, a very demanding job. And her record in public life, remember, she was first lady in charge with the reform of health care. That didn't work out, and Benghazi didn't work out. And the whole foreign policy, the so-called Arab Spring, has not worked out. She has a record of not of achievements, but disasters following her. And I don't trust her. You see, one of the major issues right now is the American people of both parties, and as well as independents, don't trust their government, starting with the president, but both parties. Believe me, it's both parties. And they're not standing still, and they don't want another liar in the White House. And guess what? Hillary Clinton fits that category on more than one occasion. What the liberal press or progressive press, both in Washington, New York, Los Angeles, have been doing is trying to knock out Governor Christie. It remains to be seen whether that's going to happen. The breaking news is his high school friend, and for those that are new to the show, the way you listen to the show, you go to my companion blog, prankpops.wordpress.com, and at the very top you'll have links to all my past shows, but at the very top you'll get about 60 of the latest shows, and below that a complete archive. And when you click on the link, that'll take you to Podomatic, and you can either download the podcast or play it by streaming it. That's how you get to listen to the show, and most of my listeners, that's how they listen. However, below that, you'll have additional information, both YouTube videos, as well as articles, photographs, charts, depending on what I'm talking about, and relevant news stories about this. Now, through his lawyer, let me get you it's Weilstein, but I forget his first name. It was a good friend, a high school friend, David Weilstein, was appointed to the Port of Authority, and he's the gentleman supposedly he's made a statement through his lawyers that documentary evidence, there's evidence, written evidence, that Christie knew of the closings beforehand and ordered it. Well, you can say anything through a lawyer, but you're going to have to prove it. And I'm not trying to defend Christie, but Christie was rather emphatic that he wasn't following this and really knew about the closings after they had reopened it by listening to the news. It doesn't appear that, you know, I find that mind-boggling, because what really broke this story is one of his people on the his staff, a woman named Kelly, the deputy head of the staff, sent an email to this guy, David Wildstein, and it's a very short email, and it's rather ambiguous email, to the effect, well, looks like it's time for some traffic delays, and this gentleman sent back, got it. Well, I've always been skeptical of that. That's not, that email is subject to interpretation. Now, it seems to indicate there were some prior communications, and this was sort of like the green light. It may or may not have been. It's obvious that the George Washington Bridge that connects New Jersey with New York or Manhattan, that you had delays because lanes were closed. So we've had breaking news that I think this will definitely move the story. I think you're going to hear more and more about it next week. You see, what people do is they break information like this late Friday. And I wasn't going to, if you had asked me this morning, will I be talking about Governor Christie? I would say absolutely not. But since he was, at least in terms of the press, being trumpeted as a potential Republican president nominee on the Republican ticket, I got to cover it. However, I will say, if this gentleman can produce the documentation and we see either Governor Christie's signature or has been copied to it, I think it's over, because you can't be that emphatic and then find out you knew about it. Because once you do that, your credibility is gone, and guess what? People lose faith in you, they can't trust you. Remember, trust in politicians is at near lows. I don't trust my government today, largely for the people that are in it. Certainly don't trust the president or his administration. I don't trust the Congress at all, including the Republican Party, and that'll be my second story. And really, what I usually do on Fridays is a weekly wrap-up. But because of time constraints, I'm just really going to hit three stories and hopefully do that in an hour or less. And the reason why I can broadcast late is they're putting the Richland Chronicle paper to bed, trying to get it out. I've been trying to get a feel for how long it was going to take. It looks like I probably have at most another 40 minutes. They'll give me a signal that I have to shut it down. So I'm not planning for a long show, although I have material that I could spend a lot of time on. I'll do it for about an hour and then wrap it up. And I wanted to lead with this Christie story, because you're going to hear through the news Saturday, Sunday, as well as into next week, stories on this. And it's not a surprise that something like this would come out on a Friday, as opposed to, remember, it's Friday before the Super Bowl. So this is a great time to release do dumps. Now, if you're in the talk show arena or you cover news, don't go home early on Fridays, because there's going to be other breaking stories. This is the perfect time to release information that you hope the press won't pick up on. And there are probably others. This is the one that obviously got my attention as well as other people's attention. And my candid opinion, I don't think he ever would have gotten the nomination. And the reason why, he really does not have the support of the conservative wing or the libertarian wing. Yeah, moderate Republicans, yeah, on the East Coast, fine. That's not going to get you the nomination. You know, it might get you elected in New Jersey, but I don't think how New Jersey goes the rest of the country. And to Governor Christie's credit, he's a good speaker. He's somewhat in your face, but that's fine. I think he has a big ego problem and really a temper problem. But he also has a sense of humor. But I think if this story or this statement that there is written documents that evidence the fact that the governor knew of it, I think he's toast. I think he's done as far as his presidential ambitions, at least for 2016, if not for 2020. And he could be hurt, really, in terms of the governorship, because the federal prosecutors are digging into this. You see, they want a scalp, and the question is, who's going to blow the whistle? Obviously, Kelly and this David Wildstein, are two that have to think long and hard, do I want to go to prison. And Kelly, a woman, has four children. I understand she's going through divorce. I don't know of that, but that's the case. She's not going to want to, has four children. She doesn't want to spend time in prison. So whatever information she has, you know, she's going to cut a deal. And so apparently is Wildstein. They're not going to just give him the information. The prosecutor, whoever the federal prosecutor is, are going to have to give him immunity. And that means higher-ups are going to have to, are going to be the ones they're pointing the finger at. I never believed that Kelly was the one that gave the order. She might have sent the message, but she didn't give the order. And yes, she was fired, and the governor says, I didn't know anything about it. Okay. Who else on your staff did know about it? You know, that's the $64,000 question. And why didn't you know anything about it? And I always say the attitude of someone's staff or business starts at the top. The tone of in an organization is whoever leads it, whether it's a business, a political party, a charity, or church. You know, I thought my initial reaction, this is crazy. No one could, the same reaction Christy had. It's a profoundly stupid thing to do, but people do stupid things all the time. Many of them intentional. Some people just make mistakes, stupid mistakes. I was working with an application that I hadn't worked with in probably 7 years, and I was having some problems, but I was making a rather beginner stupid mistake. You know, one of those things where you hit your head. Well, that's one thing, but this is a crime, folks. You don't do this. And if you hire competent staff, this shouldn't happen. And if you supervise your staff, it shouldn't happen. Apparently, he didn't hire competent staff, and he didn't supervise them. And he apologized profusely and said he was sad about it and disappointed. I can understand all that. But the problem is, you're governor of New Jersey. So we'll wait and see. Probably by, next 30 days, we'll know one way or the other. I don't think it's going to last the year. And the only really question I have, is it serious enough? Is the evidence convincing enough that he might have to resign as governor? If he does that, his political career is over. I think even though we're over 2 years away from the 2016, unless this is quickly resolved, and really the only way it could be quickly resolved is someone's going to take the fall. And I don't think so, because we're talking prison time as well as potential huge civil suits. So I don't think you're going to have people confessing and say, I was responsible. I ordered it. What they will say is, I ordered it on the orders of fill in the blank. And who knows that who that is? And it could very well be Governor Christie. Well, enough said. I'm sure Governor Christie is going to have an interesting weekend and probably even a more interesting Monday, having to answer to this. You can run, but you can't hide, Mr. Christie. And it's a little too bad, because he is an impressive speaker. He does confront people that are attacking him. But I question his judgment in this area, as well as just his centrist Republican. That's what he is. He's a middle of the roader. He's certainly not a conservative. He's certainly not a libertarian. And that plays well in Massachusetts, and that plays well in New Jersey. But Mitt Romney didn't get elected, and I really don't think Governor Christie can. Unless this can quickly be put behind him, which I don't think so, because this'll drag out at least for another year or two or three. You're really at the, it depends on who's prosecuting this and what they want to do. It's clear to me that the media was on a witch hunt. They were trying to take him out. So Hillary would, their perception is he was the major contender against Hillary Clinton. I never bought that. You see, I think the mistake the Republicans make is they listen to the press. I think if the press recommends him, and some of them were, that's not a good recommendation. But what they do is they pump people up and then they dump on them. And right now, Governor Christie is getting dumped on. And he might be innocent. Who knows? I don't know. He was rather clear a little bit windy, but made abundantly clear he didn't know, and certainly wouldn't have ordered it, and fired. Heads rolled. And that is a distinctive contrast with the President of the United States, because although the President he's been firing a lot of military commanders, but as if it's anyone in his own administration that he's appointed, he is rather, how should I say this, doesn't want to fire him. And the reason is not that he's not capable of doing that. He'll throw anyone under the bus, but if he throws someone under the bus, that reflects bad on him. That's why he doesn't do it. A good leader, if someone is on the staff and does this, they should be fired. You know, I think, for example, the terrible rollout of Obamacare, which will be coming back in the news, for that alone, the Secretary Sebelius should have been fired. She wasn't and probably won't be. On several scandals, I think Attorney General should have been fired summarily. He's not going to be fired because the reason is very simple. He knows where the bodies are buried. The last thing the president will do is fire Eric Holder, even though, again, objectively, he should have been fired. If he had any brains, he would have resigned. But you see, Eric Holder does the dirty work of the president. So people like that are valued by people that engage in activities that they shouldn't be engaged in. And the one scandal that I think really, again, hasn't been totally explored is Fast and Furious, where guns were given to store purchases that in turn sold them to Mexican who were involved with the drug cartels. And ultimately, that's where the weapons or rifles, pistols, ended up. And in turn, they were used to kill mainly Mexican citizens, over 200, as well as two federal agents. I thought in any other administration, if the press was not protecting the president, that alone would get the attorney general fired, because he was responsible for the ATF. And this was a multi-agency operation. It's not just the ATF, alcohol, tobacco, firearms. It also involved the FBI, the Justice Department, as well as the DEA. There are a number of agencies that were in on this. It was coordinated with them. It should have been stopped. It never should have happened. It never should have happened. And that's another example. When I first heard this, I said, I can't believe it. You must be kidding me. This is a joke. No one in his right mind would approve this. It's just like this closing of the lanes to the George Washington Bridge. That's stupid. That's crazy. Because once the guns got into Mexico, there's no way to trace them. They didn't put any locators, GPS locators on them. They just followed the straw purchases of the weapons to a point where they crossed over the border and couldn't follow. And what's sad about it, the ATF agents, people that knew what was happening, pleaded with their management not to do this. This is a bad idea. Doesn't make sense. Well, it does make sense if you're trying to blame U.S. gun stores for supplying upwards of 90% of the weapons used by the gun cartel, drug cartels in Mexico. And see, that was, again, the propaganda line being used by the Secretary of State, the Attorney General, and the President of the United States. I think that was the plan, to use this program to support those statistics. It didn't work out well at all. People died, several hundred. I've lost count of the death count, because what happens is you have these homicides, and some of them are brutal, and many of them are government employees, law enforcement, that the weapons used are traced to these, and we're over 2,000. We're not talking one or two handguns or a couple of hundred. We're talking over 2,000 weapons. You know, I'm surprised it's just 200. Now, the drug cartels had weapons prior to this, but this was a great channel for getting quality weapons from U.S. gun stores, and they took advantage of it. And it's a shame that it was approved. Now, they did shut it down. I think it went on for about a year. And the only reason they shut it down, it became public as to what was happening. You see, a lot of these operations continue and continue and continue, until they suddenly break as news stories. And that's what happened. And then suddenly, whoops, we got to shut it down. The problem is the truth seems to never come out. Even though there have been hearings of the House Oversight Committee, a lot of the information they requested first wasn't given to them. And the documents they got were heavily redacted. In other words, blacked out. So Fast and Furious is, I think, going to come back eventually. It might take the election of a Republican president and having a Republican attorney general look into it. Because you've noticed there hasn't been much action or news about the IRS scandal. And again, that's something that the FBI under Attorney General Holder is charged with looking into. And that's another example of a scandal in which Tea Party conservative pro-life groups were seeking a letter from the IRS that they're entitled to ask for and usually get to solicit contributions that would be deductible. The IRS was politicized, and what happened is these groups were challenged by the IRS to provide a lot of information that, frankly, the IRS doesn't need to make this determination. They were stifling freedom of speech as well as freedom of assembly, and as a direct result, these Tea Party groups, as well as conservative and pro-life groups, did not solicit money that they were going to be using to both organize people and get out the message in the 2012 elections. And when you combine that with Benghazi, which is another example of the president lying, as well as Hillary Clinton and the UN ambassador Susan Rice, you see why people don't trust the government, because the deaths were not due to a YouTube video. That is on its face laughable. No one believed that cover story. I didn't believe that cover story. So there are a lot of scandals in the Obama administration. I just gave you three of them. I think the bigger scandal is the fact the president thinks he can do by executive order, can write law by doing it. I think he's going to be disabused of that fact at some point in the not too distant future. I think it's going to take the 2014 election to do that. Now, I'm not a Republican or a Democrat. I'm an independent, and independents are about 40% of the electorate. Another 35% are Democrats, and another 25% Republicans. I've given up on both political parties because the important story is not Christie. And even though these scandals need to be examined, and some Americans follow them, myself being one of them, what is the number one concern of the American people? It's the economy and jobs, because the economy is stagnating. It truly is stagnating. And I'm going to change the order of the stories because today was the last day of Ben Bernanke's term at the Federal Reserve as chairman, and who's taking over is Janet Yellen, who was vice chairman. And she's the first woman chair of the Federal Reserve. I don't think you're going to see much change in policy. What the Federal Reserve is doing right now is starting to slowly but surely scale back what they call quantitative easing. For example, in February, they have announced that they will be buying only, listen to this number, only $65 billion of government securities, of which $30 billion are mortgage-backed securities of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and the other $35 billion, that's with a B, are Treasury securities. Now, what has the Federal Reserve been doing throughout the term, especially starting in 2009, of Ben Bernanke? They've been financing the federal government because the total balance sheet of the Fed today has over $4 trillion, over $4 trillion in government securities, primarily treasuries, but also the two primary categories are treasury securities, and there are different types of treasury securities, primarily notes and bonds, but also mortgage-backed securities. And it's hit $4 trillion. It's up from I know I did. I got something. I was scrolling down and didn't have a chart. I have a story in my notes, but at the very top, what I pulled out, and it's a great graph to look at to just see what the Fed has been doing. And it really started in 2009 and sort of took off. And they've had a series of quantitative easing, 1, 2, and 3. And now their intention is, instead of this buildup, well, they're still going to be buying. They haven't peaked yet. I mean, I need to say this. They're still buying and probably will be buying these securities for at least another year. But they're tapering off in terms of the dollar amounts. It's not zero yet, and they still haven't demonstrated an exit strategy of selling these things. You got to find somebody to buy them, and a lot of these securities are below their face value or notational value. I'm not going to get into that. The important point is what was going on. The federal government was running these massive deficits for 5 years. You know, starting in 2009, it was $1.4 trillion. 2010 fiscal, I'm talking fiscal years here. Fiscal year 2010, it was $1.3. Fiscal year 2011, it was slightly less than $1.3. 12, it was slightly less than $1.1. We're talking trillion dollars here. You see what I'm saying? You run deficits when you can't pay your bills, when your expending exceeds your total tax revenue. What individuals would call income, what the federal government calls is revenue or tax revenues. And the problem is, for every dollar that the U.S. government spends, it needs to borrow about 35 cents. And that number has been higher, and hopefully it will be going lower in the upcoming months. My fear is, I think any time this year or next year, the U.S. economy can and probably will go into a recession. And the problem is, which is two consecutive quarters of negative economic growth in terms of the gross domestic product, real gross domestic product, or GDP. And should that happen, what happens to government revenues? They go down. Because why? People aren't working. When people aren't working, they're not paying income taxes, they're not paying payroll taxes, and businesses, to the extent businesses down, or if they're still in business, businesses off, they're not paying taxes on their revenues that they've earned, or their profits. So all we need is we don't need a recession, but I think we're going to have another recession, and if that happens, what's going to happen? The Federal Reserve will revert back to another round of quantitative easing. Call it quantitative easing number 4. We're not out of the woods. You see, the $64,000 question is, how is the Fed going to unwind this? What's the words they use is exit strategy. Because they went from a level of around $800 billion to now 5 times that. And that chart really illustrates that. I think it was a bad idea. You might make a case that definitely you need it in 2009 because you're on the brink of collapse from a number of financial institutions. And this was a way to flood. Well, first of all, you have two things going on. You have, and this continues too, and this is something that needs to be looked at. I think at some point they're going to have to change monetary policy in regards to interest rates. Because we've had a near zero interest rate of 0.25% or 25 basis points since December of 2008. So 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, that's 5 years. Now, you can't tell me that that's a realistic rate. That's a very manipulative rate, and that's why they call it an easy monetary policy. See, I'm really not for Federal Reserve or central bank. I don't think a committee of PhDs in economics, a small committee, really has the wisdom to do what the free markets can do. Because the free markets consist of millions of people making decisions every day. This is what I call a leftover from a command and control economy. It started in the progressive era, in this case of Wilson. Wilson actually signed the legislation, I believe it was a day or two before Christmas in 1913, and the Fed started open for business in 1914, but it was really bankers who designed this, and they benefit from it. Who really has benefited from the financial collapse? It's the bankers. Now, yeah, hundreds of banks have gone out of business because they should go out of business because they're insolvent. And that's where the liabilities exceed the assets. That's why you got to look at the balance sheet of any bank or any business for that matter. And the reason why many banks were insolvent is they made bad loans and bad investments, and the investments they were made were in mortgage-backed securities, amongst other things. So many banks have been closed, and their customer base and assets transferred to more successful banks. The problem that really has not been dealt with are financial institutions that are so-called too big to fail, because they're going to fail again. It's just a matter of time. It might be several decades, or it could be just several years, because financial crisis, they used to be called panics, are recurring. I really don't think the large financial institutions have learned their lesson. And the reason why, few of those executives have gone to jail. Many of the largest ones, they're back at it again, taking risk and making a lot of money, in some cases acquiring other banks. They're getting bigger. And the problem you had is the managements of these banks really did not understand, and you need to understand, the risk they were taking on to manage it. You had two or three key problems. Highly risky investments and leverage. And the reason in leverage is you used borrowing or debt to buy these investments. And the reason people do that, on the upside, that means they can be very, very profitable. The problem is it works both ways. Leverage can be beneficial in terms of really increasing your rates of return. But when the risk became manifest, it goes the other way. And you can have major losses. You see, many of the largest financial institutions, as well as investment banks, if we didn't have this bailout mentality, this lender of last resort, which is, whether you like it or not, one of the primary functions of a central bank, including the Federal Reserve, many of these banks, financial institutions, investment banks, would have went under. It is only because we had massive bailouts and lending to these institutions that they didn't. You see, what's going on is these institutions make a lot of money, and their executives make a lot of bonuses. However, when the financial crisis hit, these companies were faced with major losses. And for example, if the Federal Reserve had not bailed out AIG, an insurance company that was selling these credit default swaps. And I'm not going to get into the details of that other than this. If AIG was required to fail, in other words, AIG was not bailed out, then what should have happened? A lot of these investment banks, including Goldman Sachs, could have taken large hits. And they never should have been bailed out for 100 cents on the dollar. Yeah, maybe 50 cents or 75 cents. It depends on the situation. But why 100%? It's politics, folks. It's politics. Who was the Secretary of the Treasury when this crisis hit? The former chairman of Goldman Sachs. He made sure that Goldman Sachs was taken care of, not directly, but the fact that in conjunction with the Federal Reserve, that AIG was bailed out, and which in turn bailed out Goldman Sachs. You see, the financial people it's not just in Wall Street. They made a lot of money, and the size in terms of the economy is really gone up. But when we hit a financial crisis, what happened? They were taken care of. Many of them, not all of them, but many of them were taken care of. Now, who lost? Yeah, the stockholders lost. And in many cases, not only the stockholders, but the creditors, the bondholders lost. And some of the executives obviously were fired. But the financial institution is ongoing. You see, I'm a strong believer in capitalism and the profit motive. And when you screw up, when you're a poor steward of the money entrusted with you, you should pay the price. And that is not what has happened. You see, a recession is good in this sense. Businesses, and their executives that were poor stewards or managers, no matter what the business, not just financial services, and made poor decisions, they should lose their jobs, and the stockholders, if not losing all their money, lose a large percentage of it. That's what we need. That's not happening for the very large financial institutions. Now, the small guys, they're not going to get relief. Small guys always take it. And what's sad about it, there are many, many well-run financial institutions, insurance companies, as well as commercial banks that didn't need a bailout, but they were not engaged in investments that were highly risky and using leverage. The ones that got hurt are the ones that played that game and lost. You see, most of this business is the investments are long-term in nature, and that's key to understand. However, they're financed by what? Short-term lending, overnight lending. And when that pool dries up in a financial crisis, that's when you have failure. And we did. I don't really have time to continue this other than to say I fully anticipate that Janet Yellen is going to do the same thing that Ben Bernanke did as well as Alan Greenspan. They're going to follow an easy monetary policy, and it's only a matter of time. I would say definitely within the next 24 months, if not sooner, you're going to have another round of quantitative easing, which is another way of saying printing money. But technically, it's not printing money. It's creating money on a keyboard into a database. And all that's happening is the Federal Reserve gives the United States government, namely the Department of the Treasury, a credit, and then it gives them a note, a Federal Reserve note, but it's a credit. And then the U.S. government can spend that money to pay its bills. And in turn, what the Federal Reserve gets is a Treasury security, and that's what you're seeing on this chart. And you can see how it's grown. I think it's going to get much worse. I wouldn't be surprised if 2 years from now, it's over $5 trillion, if not $6 trillion. Because if we go into it, even though they're tapering now, they're still buying $65 billion a month times 12. You do the math. You see, if we have another, if the deficits start to go back up again, and if we go into recession, they definitely will start going up again, we could have a series, another $1 trillion deficits. If that's the case, you will quickly see the Federal Reserve's balance sheet go over $5 and then $6, $7 trillion. And they'll be back to buying somewhere between 80 and 100 billion a month. And that's an indicator of a problem. And the problem is government spending is out of control. So Ben Bernanke is leaving, but I really don't think you're going to see much, if any, change in policy. They've sort of launched this gradual cutting back, but I don't think it's going to get to zero. I think what you're going to get before it gets to zero is another recession, and once that happens, they'll reverse course. They'll start buying more. And if you want to find out where would I look to know what they're going to do, well, you go to the monthly Treasury report, the MTS. Just Google it, MTS Treasury Department, and usually, not always, on the eighth business day of every month, by the eighth business day, the report comes out and you can see how much money the U.S. government has collected and how much money it has spent and what is its deficit or surplus. That's what I look at, and that's what most people that are in the financial world, whatever their role, look at. And you'll see that what's very hard to estimate are tax collections, because that really depends on how well businesses are doing. In certain months, for example, January, you're going to get a lot of money coming in because people are paying their taxes. So you're going to see some months where there's definitely a surplus, and the reason why is you have tax collections. But if we hit a recession, what happens? Tax collections, both payroll and income taxes, will go down. Right now, they've been rising, but I think we're right at another start of a recession. And my crystal ball is not any better than anyone else's. And I've been wrong in the timing of this. And the major reason why I've been wrong in the timing is the Federal Reserve, this massive intervention. Because many economists, including me, would say you shouldn't be doing this because you're not going to be able to unwind it in a timely manner and it's going to lead to more inflation. Now, the stock market has been going down. Why? I'm not surprised. The reason it went up is because it was fueled by this easy monetary policy of the Federal Reserve. Now that it's fairly clear that they're going to gradually reduce it, probably about 5 to 10 million a month. In January, it was 75 billion. In February, it's 65 billion. I don't think they're going to go 10, 10, 10, 10, 10. I think that might be the plan, but I don't be surprised if it goes from 10 to 5 in terms of a monthly reduction. And we'll really find out probably sometime in April after we get the unemployment numbers for January, February, March, as well as the first quarter of 2014 GDP numbers. Because unemployment, when you factor in the low participation rate, is actually very, very high. The headline number is very misleading. Not that you should zero in on it, but that's what they say they're targeting. That once the unemployment rate gets to 6.5%, they'll definitely start easing. Well, we're only 0.2% there, but what's not should be factored in, and I think they're smart enough to know this, is we're at record low participation rates of 62.8%. And the last time we saw those rates was in Jimmy Carter when he was president in March of 1978. You see, normally, ladies and gentlemen, the participation rate in terms of the labor force, people that are in the labor force working, the labor participation rate historically has been between 66 and 67%. It has changed over decades, and it's gone up, up, and up. But since the so-called Great Recession, that number has plummeted, and that's not good. See, ideally, what you want is the participation rate to go up, up, and up, employment to go up, up, and up, and then the unemployment rate to go down, down, and down, and including the level in terms of number of people. And yes, while the unemployment rate has gone down, as well as the number of unemployed has gone down, you have millions of people that have left the labor force because they simply can't find jobs. And by definitions, when they do these surveys, they are not counted as being unemployed. It's a definitional thing. Now, if you ask them, are they unemployed? They'll all say, yeah, I'm unemployed, but not according to the Department of Labor Bureau of Labor Statistics definition. So I wish Ben Bernanke well. I'm not sure where he's going. He originally was chairman of the economics department at Princeton. I'm making an assumption here, probably go back and write his memoirs. I think his tenure has been very much mixed. I do not agree with the quantitative easing policies that he pursued, especially the last round. This is what I call a command and control. It's right out of the 1930s, and Ben Bernanke is an expert about the Depression in the 1930s. And he said, by God, the Federal Reserve is not going to crash this economy. We're going to do anything we can to prevent that. His focus was to prevent deflation, which is the opposite of inflation. I'm not seeing much, if any, of that. Yeah, you're always going to have recessions, but I think he over-fine-tuned. He left the easy money policy on far too long, over 5 years at near zero. No economist in right mind would say that in a free market economy that interest rates should be fixed. That's the federal funds rate, the overnight rate. You can't borrow at that, but banks can. That's just another example of government intervention into the economy. And they're charged with monetary policy. Why does he get away with this? Because Congress wants him to get away with. This is a hidden tax. To the extent that you have any inflation, that's a tax. It benefits the federal government to have low interest rates because they got to borrow money, huge amounts of money. The national debt will hit over $18 trillion within the next 16 months. Not 16 months, six months, maybe 7 months. Could be sooner if we go into recession. Right now, I really think the problem with professional economists, especially if you're on the Fed board, is how do we get out of this mess? How do we unwind a $4 trillion balance sheet where you have hundreds of millions of those securities, I won't say are worthless, but are worth a fraction of what they should be valued? In other words, they're garbage. They're not worth zero, but they're certainly not worth their face value, for sure. So we'll see what Janet Yellen is doing. I'm not really expecting much change. She will do exactly what Greenspan and Bernanke have been doing, being very accommodative, which is another word for saying an easy monetary policy. In other words, they will keep the federal funds rate at a very low rate. Right now, it's near zero, 25 basis points. See, that should have been going up. Their fear is, and you're seeing it already when they're the so-called tapering. That's what they call it, the operative word. You're going to hear this word again and again and again in the coming months, is the Federal Reserve is tapering. In other words, buying less and less Treasury securities as well as mortgage-backed securities. I think that's going on, but what does that mean? The worry on Wall Street in the financial sectors is that in a not-too-distant future, barring another recession, I need to say that real quick, that you're going to see a reversal and start getting a tighter monetary policy. Right now, it's loose. Loosey-goosey time. Katie barred the door, by the door. Their mission in life is to finance the federal government. Cutting through all the BS and the jargon, that's what they're doing. They're providing the money for the federal government to engage in massive deficit financing. I'm not a Keynesian. These people are. But I need to at least defend Keynes a little, because I've been studying quite a bit on him. He was not for having deficits when the economy's growing. In fact, he wanted surpluses. That's not what's happened. We've had years, we've had 12 years of increasing deficits under Republicans and Democrats. These are big government types. See, that's why Keynes really took over the profession. He died in 1946, in April of 46. He wrote his rather theoretical book, really a book that's hard to understand. I'm rereading it, but it's a very theoretical book. There's very little policy in it, but it revolutionized the economics profession and shifted the focus to macroeconomics. But prior to that publication of the book, the General Theory of Employment, I always get the name wrong. It's the General Theory of Employment, Interest Rates, and Money. I think I got the order right. Prior to that, and there's very little policy in it, except for maybe the last chapter. Prior to that, though, he was an advisor to the British government, specifically the Treasury. And in terms of his policy recommendation, he was a big believer in public works. So when we get in a depression, which is the conditions both Great Britain and the United States were in, he would recommend that the British government, as well as the United States government, invest in public works. It could be roads, buildings, whatever. And to pay for that, engage in deficit financing where your outlays exceed your revenues. And the way they finance that is exactly what we're doing, or the Fed's been doing it, by issuing government securities. Where the central bank, whether it's in the United States or Great Britain, buys the securities to the extent you can't sell them on the open market. However, when you're in a so-called expanding economy, admittedly growing slow and with a high rate of unemployment, I really don't think he would be a big advocate of what they're doing. Now, he did favor monetary policy and things that Ben Bernanke is doing. Need to clear that up. But where are the surpluses? In other words, if you're in a recession or in a depression, yes, the government should run deficits. And then when you come out of a recession where your economy is growing, you should run surpluses to pay down the debt. So you run deficits and finance by the central bank to take up the slack, if you will, from the decline in investment in the private sector. That's the theory or the policy. Well, it's really the policy recommendation. But we've been growing. We've been out of recession since July of 2009. And unemployment hit a bottom in December of 2009. That's 4 years ago. And what have we been doing in those 4 years? Running massive deficits. Ladies and gentlemen, the central problem of the United States today is out-of-control spending. Out-of-control spending. That is what the president should be doing, as should be focusing on, as well as Congress. Neither of them are doing it. The phrase I hate is they're kicking the can down the road. They don't think this. They think they can get away with it until it blows up, until the debt bomb blows up. And at that point, Katie bar the door. Do I think the federal government is going to technically become bankrupt? No. What they're going to do is print more money, what they're doing right now, or create more money. And as a result, you'll have inflation. And some will say, well, where's the inflation? Well, listen, I go shopping. Unlike many economists and politicians, I actually go do my shopping. I see it on the shelves. I see it in almost anything I buy. Prices are going up. I don't care about your CPI index. I know inflation is the byproduct of an expansionary monetary policy, which we had, or a loose and easy money policy. The effects is a general increase in prices. That's the consequence. The actual inflation is being caused by the central bank now. Some of it has been exported abroad, and I'm getting a little too far astray and a little, I know I probably lost some of you. But let me bring it back. If you're unemployed, there are several reasons why we've had these high, persistently high unemployment rates. Believe me, where you've had for the over the last 5 years unemployment rates above 6%, the only comparable time, and it was much worse, but is the Great Depression, when it was above 14% for almost a decade. And we really didn't come out of the Great Depression until really after the war. So if you're looking for a job and having trouble getting it, I'll tell you one of the reasons. We have out-of-control government spending. We have out-of-control regulation and out-of-control taxes in terms of raising the rates. The federal government is simply too big. And until both parties try to do something on it, and they're not going to do it. You see, the Democratic Party is committed to growing, making the federal government much, much larger. And the way they want to pay for it, besides borrowing money, is more and more taxes, which has the negative effect or disincentive of discouraging businesses from being formed as well as expanded capital formation or investment. I understand that, and most of these economists should understand it. See, where I think Keynes was wrong, he didn't really anticipate, because he was in the economic conditions that influenced his work were the fact that you had high levels of unemployment. And instead of doing nothing, he was recommending that the British government engaged in a program of public works to put people back to work, as well as get interest rates very low, like what Ben Bernanke's doing. Ben Bernanke's a Keynesian. I'm not, and I'm proud of. I don't think economists should be in schools. I need to say this. But the reality is you're going to put labels on people. I fundamentally disagree with the policies of Greenspan, Bernanke, and Yellen. It is government intervention in the economy, and it does have economic effects. And if you're wondering why the unemployment rate remains so high, it's because exactly what the Federal Reserve has been doing, as well as the federal government, and in turn, the Congress, for not really taking on these problems. You see, we, ladies and gentlemen, have divided government. We have two parties that are fundamentally different in where they want to go, although some in the Republican Party would go along with the Democrats. As a matter of fact, most of the leadership would go along with the Democrat. Although they don't want government to be as large, they still want to grow it. What I'm talking about, an economic necessity you're going to require, is a downsizing of the federal government. Do I know when that's going to take place? No. The sooner the better. But it will be forced on the U.S. economy when the so-called debt bomb goes off. In other words, when people say, Yeah, I'll lend the federal government money, but it's not going to be at 3%, 4%, or 5%. It's going to be at 8%, 9%, 10%. That's when it's going to hit the fan, when the risk premium required for people investing in the bonds will be a lot higher than these very manipulated and compressed rates of the Federal Reserve. I'm going to spend no more on this story because it's really going to be a story all year. But I want to wish Ben Bernanke well. I hope he enjoys going back to college and teaching. He probably wishes he never went to Washington. I don't know. I think he had the right education, intelligence to do it. I just fundamentally disagree with what he did, and only time will tell. Now, the third story, and I've somewhat reversed the order. This was really the third story, so if you're looking for my notes, and again, it's prompops.wordpress.com is where you go to listen to the show, as well as find my notes for each story that are below those links. But the last story, which is the second story on this for the show, is about the so-called Republican retreat, where the Republicans had a gathering, and House Speaker Boehner, John Boehner, presented his so-called principles. And what I'm hearing bits and pieces. The majority of the Republican Party does not want immigration to be front and center or an issue. In other words, nothing should happen. Absolutely nothing. Let me phrase that differently. From what I'm gathering, the majority of Republicans in the House and in the Senate don't want immigration reform this year, period. What they want is immigration law enforcement. The problem is, and I think the Republican Party, including people that take that position, where their big problem, and it takes a certain amount of courage to state this, I'm for enforcement of the immigration laws. Now, what does that mean? That means deporting people. Does that mean the government has to do it? No. You can make it very, very clear to those illegal aliens that are working here that after a certain date, if you're in any way picked up by law enforcement and you're here illegally, you will be arrested and deported and sent back to your country of origin. Now, here's the problem. And I can get them over this problem real easy. Many of these Republicans that want legalization for these illegal aliens buy into this big lie number of 11 million. It's not 11 million, and I don't know the number. But I have a strong basis of believing it's somewhere between 30 and 50 billion. Million. It's not billion, it's million. And that's the easiest way to bring home the point. It's not 11 million, gentlemen and ladies. It's north of 30 million, and it's probably north of 40. And if you fall for this trap, this Democratic trap of granting legal status to illegal aliens in a period of 5, 10, 15 years, probably closer to 5 than 10 or 15, you won't have control of the House, the Senate, or the presidency probably for the next 40, 50, 60 years. Because the majority of these illegal aliens that are criminals, an illegal alien has committed at least 3 crimes by just being in the United States and working here. So don't give me the nonsense about, oh, we're going to deport criminals if they have a record. Excuse me, they're breaking the law just by being here and working here and getting fraudulent documents so they can. They're all criminals. Yeah, they haven't been tried in a court. I understand that. They're lawbreakers. Scofflaws is the term, but they're lawbreakers, repeat offenders, and they're doing it every day. I see it on this campus every day, crime. I don't report it. Why? The police won't do anything. ICE won't do anything. Immigration Customs Enforcement won't do anything. They'd have to shoot somebody or run them over a car before they could get arrested. Not in other countries. Believe me, in other countries, if you're there illegally, they don't treat you with kid gloves. They'll throw you in jail, might beat the you-know-what out of you, and then kick you out of the country, if you're lucky. we're the ones that are all welcoming this. The problem that the Republican Party has, they can't confront this fact. And a number of people, including Ann Coulter, but I've been guilty of it, I think the Republican Party was on the verge of committing suicide. That's the joke about the suicide watch. And I don't think we're out on the woods on that. I think maybe Mr. Boehner got a little religion at the retreat, a lot of big-time pushback. You see, I think a lot of the leadership is pushing this for two reasons. One is campaign contributions, but two is, guess what? They want to cash in their chips. How do they cash in their chips? They resign or retire and become a lobbyist on K Street. And then they get a huge pay raise, 10 times at least. It happens over and over and over again with both Democrats and Republicans. But who are they fundamentally betraying? They're betraying the American people, because the American people, by a vast majority, don't want any part of this. And if the Republicans are stupid enough to make immigration an issue and agree to legal status for illegal aliens, the so-called 11 million that are really more than 30, I, and as well as many millions, tens of millions of Americans, will sit home. And then they will be out of a job, many of them. Not the ones that should be, unfortunately. Remember, every 2 years, everyone in the House is up for re-election. So if you're squishy on immigration, you have a problem, because your political base is not with you. And if you're stupid enough to go along with the Democratic Party that are pushing this, and the only reason why they're pushing it is not that they really care about illegal aliens. They could care less. But they think, and I think they're right, at least for the foreseeable future, that if they can get the Republican leadership to fall for this nonsense, and some respectable people, at least in the past, like Paul Ryan, are behind this, they have a lock on the House and the Senate and the presidency for many, many, many years. Why? Is it going to happen overnight? No. But in 5, 10, 15 years it will, because if they give legalization to illegal aliens, in other words, reward criminal behavior, it's the end of the Republican Party in terms of ever getting a majority. They'll be back to where they were in the 50s, 60s, where the House and usually the both houses were controlled by the Democratic Party. Yeah, you're occasionally going to throw the bum out and elect a Republican president, but you're always going to be in minority status. So don't fall for, and I don't care what the label is, whether you call it amnesty or a pathway to amnesty, a pathway to citizenship or legal status, the end result is the same. They stay here and work here. In other words, take jobs from American citizens. When we have over 25 million Americans today that are looking for a permanent job, over 11 million, according to U3 statistics, that it's the government statistics, they lowball it, they don't count people that are really unemployed. See, the focus should be on jobs. The number one issue of the Republican Party, it should be policies that promote full employment. Now, what is an example of that? Balancing the budget. They've had 2 years to try to cut it. They've cut it a little, but they're so far away from balancing the budgets. It's a joke. They should be able to do it in 4 years. Elect a Republican House, Senate, and President. That should happen. It won't happen. You know why? Because the same folks, when George Bush were president, that were in Congress, are now the leaders. And who started these massive deficits? It's George Bush. He lives in Dallas. He's not a neighbor of mine, but we're in the same city. He's for big government. He grew the government. It's just like Nixon. The liberals and progressives hate Nixon. But he was the biggest spender around. And Reagan, although a libertarian, remember, he didn't control Congress. He was double-crossed twice. Once in that they didn't cut spending, and the second time is they didn't secure the border. So my advice to the Republican Party, and remember, I'm not a Republican. I left them. They lost me in 2006. I got sick and tired of Bush and his spending. I'm a constitutional conservative. I believe in limited government. I believe in balanced budgets. And I certainly don't believe in running deficit year after year after year when they're growing. Because what does it end We have it right now in the United States. United States is a warfare welfare state where upwards of over 50% of the American people are dependent on a government paycheck in one form of or another. I never thought I would ever say that. And if the Democrats have their way, it would be 2 out of 3. They want government dependency because government dependency enables the political class to control you. That's what we're talking about. Power means you can coerce people to do things and become dependent on you. And they want the dependency because once you're dependent on them, they expect, and I think the expectation is reasonable and rational, that you will vote for them. So the Republican Party did not commit suicide at the retreat. The jury's still out on this one. Because what I'm hearing is, no, we're going to wait till the primaries are over. You see, they don't want to get out in front on this until they got their nominations sewed up. I think that's being terrifically short-sighted. If you had any brains, you wouldn't touch this with a 10-foot pole. You know, the answer is very simple. If I were a congressman or senator and someone asked me, what is your position on immigration? I believe in a vigorous enforcement of all immigration laws. And if the newsman or whoever asked me, well, what does that mean? That means all, underline all, the operative word is all, illegal aliens, and that's foreigners who have broken into this country and that are working in this country, should be deported, which means sent back to their country of origin. That is the law of the land. And that is what the American people are expecting. And if that happened, what would happen? Several things. You would have a lot less American citizens being unemployed, point one. Point two, you would have a lot less money at the federal, state, and local level spent on welfare, education, medical treatment for illegal aliens. Because many of these illegal aliens, they bring their wives, their girlfriends, and their children along. And where do the children spend their time all day? In the schools. Does that cost money? You better believe it. And when they have a medical problem, where do they go to? The emergency room. They go to Parkland here. And they try to get food stamps. They try to get welfare. They try to get subsidies. By hook or by crook. Other crimes. So what happens is they become a burden on local government, on school districts and cities. Now, some will quickly say, well, they're working and they're paying their taxes. They're working here illegally. What don't you understand? If Americans had those jobs, they would be working and paying taxes too. For the life of me, I wonder where I know why they're doing this. It's for the money. It's money and power. You can simplify it very easily. That's why they're doing it. They've sold out. They're betraying the American people. And should that happen, should the Republican Party do that, I think they will just tremendously accelerate the growth of independence and at some future date in the not distant future, the formation of a new political party that will be truly principled. You know, I'm still getting a laugh. I really want to digest and read the so-called principles that John Boehner and the leadership of the Republican Party have come up with. I can make it real simple. I'll give you the Tea Party principles, or if you are the libertarian principles, or the conservative principles, the rule of law. Principle one, I believe in the rule of law, and that entails the enforcement of federal laws by the federal government. And that includes immigration laws that are currently on the books. That means deportation of 30 to 50 million illegal aliens. Does the government need to do all of that? No. You make it literally impossible for illegal aliens to work here. And guess what? They'll go home the same way they got here. The roads in Texas and most states run both ways. You'll get massive people will, on their own free will return to the country of origin. Why? They can't find jobs. Their children and wives do not get access to our public schools and our hospitals, except for emergencies. This is tough policy. This is tough love.
And that's why I say I zero in on the big lie, the $11 million. There, and you hear it over and over again. I will say this. Maybe there's some progress. I was listening to a news story on this. It was on the retreat. And the gentleman said $12 million. Gee, it went up a million. How about that? That's progress. It rather has been stalled there for years, even though anywhere from 3 to 5 million every year are crossing the Mexican border or flying in and overstaying their visa. Gee, it went up a million. The problem is you have the Republican leadership as well as the Democratic leadership, and sad to say, some commentators on the radio, they blindly accept this number. Blindly accept it. And what's worse is I think the Democratic Party is absolutely right. If they can sucker the Republican Party to agree to legal status for all the illegal aliens that are here, they're going to get at least 70% of those as voters. And then the Republicans can kiss any future, but they'll never win control of the House or the Senate for many, many decades. There'll be a fluke occasionally. That's what they're trying to do. They don't really care about these illegal. They'll say it. This is a way for them to retain power for many, many, many years by dramatically increasing their voter base. They already have 10 points in terms of registration on the Republican Party. But you see what the Democratic Party has figured out, as well as some Republicans, and it's beginning to scare them, is independents are the fastest growing political affiliation. And like I said yesterday, once that goes over 50%, and we're probably 5 to 10 years away from that, but it'll happen. It will definitely happen. Once that happens, I think that's a tipping point. That's when it makes a lot of sense to have a third party. And I'm tired of hearing other talk show hosts that either served in Republican administrations or their daddy was a Republican. They're true blood. They're Republicans first. Not conservatives, not libertarians, not Americans. They're Republicans first. My comment to them is get over it. Look at what the Republican Party has turned into. Is that what a principled conservative is? Is that what a principled libertarian is? Is that what a principled Tea Party movement member is? Absolutely not. Where's the one of the key principles is fiscal responsibility. I haven't seen that from the Republican Party. The second is the enforcement of law, the rule of law. Where's the Congress in terms of the Republican Party demanding that what the president is doing in terms of the executive orders to really stop them? Congress is supposed to make the laws, not the President of the United States by dictate. And I know I'm going to make a mistake saying this. But how did Hitler get control of Germany? He was democratically elected. But then he, for all practical purposes, did away. I forget what they call it. I want to say the Diet, but I know that's not right. Did away with the equivalent of the House and the Senate in Germany. And he ruled by dictate. He was a totalitarian. Same with Stalin, same with Mao. That's what we have in the White House. And Senator Cruz is absolutely right. That is the most disturbing and dangerous aspect of President Obama. And the only way you're going to stop it is stop it early and often. Every time he pulls this nonsense, all the leadership should go after him, big time. Not before the election, but after the election, if he continues on this. You know, sometimes people just don't get the message. Then impeach the SOB because he's violating his oath of office every day, as Senator Cruz pointed out. And for your students on Richland College campus, I do have an article on the State of the Union message that pertains to this. It's largely quotes from both Obama, Cruz, Paul, Rand Paul, and others. And my recommendation is very simple. It's not hard to understand. Balance the budget by cutting federal spending. The sooner the better. Cut tax rates. Preferably scrap the federal income tax system and go to a broad-based consumption tax, such as the fair tax. That's fiscal policy, both spending and taxes. Took about a sentence. That should be on the list of principles. I'm really going to enjoy seeing these principles in terms of immigration. I bet you they don't say we should enforce immigration laws, but that's another thing they should do. When do criminal aliens take preference to American citizens? I can't think of another country that would even entertain anything remotely similar to this. Yet that is what the Democratic leadership wants. And if I can believe what I'm reading in the papers and seeing on television via YouTube, a significant portion of the leadership of the Republican Party are doing it. I know why they're doing it. It's campaign contributions. It's a nice lobbyist job when they retire. And for the Democrats, it's power. It's getting votes. The American people are being betrayed, because we have politicians that have forgot their oath of office. They're betraying their oath of office. They're not doing what's right for the general welfare of this country and its citizens by putting criminal aliens ahead of American citizens. I'm outraged. It saddens me. And this is not the way it used to be at all. So we'll probably learn more over this weekend and next week about what really happened in the retreat. People are already talking. If John Boehner Authority could make this a secret little deal and dupe the American people, there's going to be massive pushback by the American people. You see, the Republican Party, if they want to keep control of the House and Senate, repeal Obamacare, number one. Balance the budget and truly show programs that are going to do it. Not this 10-year garbage. None of this pathway garbage of Ryan. Put on the table a four-year plan. At the end of 4 years, the federal budget of this country is balanced. And that means cuts, and that means closing federal departments. And if you can't stomach that, then retire. Go work on K Street. Goodbye. And I think, and that's my recommendation, I don't have any sympathy for this leadership, because many of them are going to stay in Washington and cash in. And they'll become lobbyists. There's a long history of this. I was reading a book, and I don't have the exact statistics. In 1968, the author of this book was saying, there, in terms of K Street, and that's where lobbyists have their offices in Washington, there were less than 100 lobbyists, registered lobbyists. I want to say the number was like 62 or 64. Today, there are tens of thousands of them. I believe it's over 60,000. Now, why? Because it works. It works. It's not hard to understand. Senator, Congressman, if you vote for my bill, I'll make sure that the executives of the companies that I represent will support your campaign. And by the way, Senator, Congressman, eventually you're going to retire. And I know of several companies, maybe even mine, that will hire you as a lobbyist, because we know you have the connections. We know you're a leader. Stroke, stroke, stroke. Oh, thank you. I'll make sure that this legislation is handled properly. And he turns to us, take care of it, staff. And the staff does the same thing. Where are the statesmen? Where are the people that put the welfare of the American people first? A good question. I just don't know where they are. There's some. They're not all like this. It's the corruption and the criminalization of the so-called ruling elite in Washington, D.C. And it becomes apparent in the fact that less and less of the American people trust the government. It's low time. Congress has approval ratings under 10%. There's a reason for it. I'm disgusted of the leadership of the Republican Party. And I'm not even a Republican. I could easily say a plague on both houses. What I want is the formation of a third party to take out both parties. And I don't really think that's that hard to do. It takes organization. It takes money. But if you have a message that's powerful and principled and distinguishes you from your competition, ladies and gentlemen, you will win every time. But it does take courage. It does take integrity. It does take ability to communicate with people. And it's not one person, it's many people over many years. And I think the Tea Party is just the start of it. Because I think people in the Tea Party, as well as the conservative movement and the libertarian movement, are really sick and tired of both political parties. Many Democrats are now in the Republican Party, but I think Democrats are leaving their party and Republicans are leaving their party. And it's only a matter of time before independence of the majority. And once that happens, you will see a third party. Thank you for listening. You have been listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. Now, back to the music.